The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis. Everybody, Alan Ellis here. This is the Outdoorsman Radio Show. We talk about fishing, hunting, and the great outdoors. And for this hour, we're going to talk about fishing with our guest for the hour, Dr. Joseph W. Love, who is the title bass manager for the Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fishery Service. Good morning, Doctor. How are you? Hello, Joe.
Sure.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Good. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you there for a minute. So after that great introduction, I couldn't hear a word you were saying. So that was my fault.
Well, I did hear the great introduction.
So
I appreciate that. I don't get it too often.
So gotcha.
But I got my cup of coffee now. So I'm,
you're good then.
I'm ready to talk some bass. Yeah. That's right. It's all getting better.
That's good. All right. After a little rough start there, we'll launch right into it. So how's the bass fishing in Maryland these days?
It's better in spots than others, I think.
Yeah.
We've had some problems on the Potomac River recently, and we've had a lot of conversations about that with the other agencies and that have jurisdiction of that fishery, as well as a lot of the anglers. And to gauge where their thoughts are on that fishery. But, we think it's going to come back.
Back 20 years ago, I mean, that was the place to fish for tidal bass. The Bassmasters had their, BASS had their tournaments there, and others had major tournaments on the Potomac. And I've been hearing over the past couple of years that things have started to decline to some degree. What's the deal with that?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We've seen a decline in tournament activity out there. Some of that could be related to economics, but some of it I think is related to the fishery. We've seen more folks going to the upper bay. The fishery there seems to be stronger. Our surveys, Maryland DNR, tidal bass surveys, seem to indicate that there's been our catch indices are declining as for both, adult bass and juvenile bass.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a little different than what the other agencies are showing. We had a meeting with the Potomac River Fisheries Commission last year to discuss this with the other agencies. And, Virginia's not demonstrating any change in their fishery. In fact, they're showing quite the opposite trend in a couple of their tributaries. And D.C. really hasn't shown any change in their fishery. They're kind of like at a baseline.
Mm-hmm.
And We've spent some time reckoning maybe what would have happened out there. And based on our data set, which is pretty doggone extensive, we think that there was a period around 2008 and 2009 when there were a lot of anglers out there and catch rates were high at the same time. So we had a lot of folks out there who were catching a lot of fish, and that likely led to a lot of handling stress. So what we've seen is that there was lower annual survivorship in the population. So more adults were likely dying during that time and probably shortly thereafter. And usually, that was kind of a unique period when angling efforts high and catch rates are high. at the same time, given the time series on Potomac. But usually that kind of lower survivorship is compensated by reproduction. But unfortunately, after 2011, the grasses were, you know, cut by about 50% in the Potomac system, as well as in the Upper Bay. And we think that that's because of tropical storms that hit that, that region. And it's been a slow recovery of grasses. And with the disappearance of a lot of that habitat, not only did that affect anglers being able to find the bass, that also affected reproduction. And it made for a difficult situation to become a bit worse.
Would that have
recently?
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you if the storm activity could have basically, you said Virginia noticed an increase in their fishery. Could that storm system have flushed those fish further south?
Well, I guess that's a possibility. You know, I was taking a look at Virginia's grass information, and there are a couple of their tribs where the grasses really didn't change much as a response to that storm. So, you know, when we manage the fishery, we have a lot of sites along the shoreline and the Potomac. We survey a lot of sites along the shoreline and the Potomac and a lot of the tributaries. So we cover a much bigger area than what Virginia does. And, you know, I think what happened is they were seeing some positive benefits for the grasses not to have disappeared in their areas. Plus, I have no idea what the fishing pressure is like in those tributaries. But I have a good idea of what the fishing pressure is like in places like Mattawoman Creek and Chickamauxin and Piscataway, you know, some more popular areas. So there's that possible explanation. It could be true that, you know, the bass got pushed down as well, or pushed to different areas. Some of our anglers were thinking that they were, you know, moving into more deeper waters and that they were just more difficult to find because the grasses were gone, so they were just in different habitats. You know, we have some data to justify that too, but I tend to believe the anglers as well that, you know, the adults are just in different areas, so it just kind of made for a different fishing situation. But things have changed. As I said, the number of anglers on that fishery have been, you know, steadily declining, or a number of tournament anglers anyway, because that's all we measure out there, have been steadily declining. And so that means fishing efforts declining. And we're seeing over the past couple of years an improvement in grasses. So there's natural recovery of the grasses. So I'm hopeful this past year, or this past weekend rather, the Paralyzed Veterans of America were out fishing their national series on the Potomac, and we were lucky enough to work with them. Maryland Bass Nation sponsors them, and they came out and they did some fishing for 2 days, and we got to see the fish coming in, and a lot of them had limits. That was great news. The bass that were coming in looked good, and anglers seemed to really be enjoying themselves, which is you know, really important to us. You know, we just want to make sure that folks are getting out there. They may get skunked on a day, but we want to make sure that they're having a good time, I guess, while they're getting skunked. But these guys seem to be bringing in some good fish and good bags and seem to be enjoying themselves. So I assume that, you know, things are on the up and up, but you know, our surveys aren't until the fall, so, you know, we won't be out there surveying the bass until then.
I want to circle back to something you said earlier about the 2008-2009 and a lot of anglers out there handling a lot of fish. You know, the catch and release portion of bass fishing is highly touted as, you know, high survivability. Does what you commented on about the abundance of anglers and a lot of fish being handled, does it kind of fly in the face of that, where, you know, you just you just can't keep handling the same fish time after time after time, day after day after day. And you mentioned the upper bay and the you know, the flats is just overrun with tournaments. Are we looking at another potential situation there with, you know, these guys? I mean, the guys work the shoreline Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Right.
They catch the same fish. They take them out of the water. They unhook them. They handle them. They put them back. You know, the next weekend, there's another six tournaments or eight tournaments there on the same, you know, the same waters time after time after time. Are we looking at the same type of scenario?
Yeah, I think, I think it's a possibility. Remember Captain Ken Penrod voiced the same concern of the Upper Bay, I guess, last year, the year before last. And I don't disagree with them. We have seen an increase in the number of tournament anglers using that system, but I don't want to put this all on the shoulders of, you know, tournament anglers.
No.
It's
anglers. Yeah. You've got a tremendous amount of pressure on these fish, not only in that, that Susquehanna area. I mean, you've got the wide open gates up there in Conowingo right now. You've got, you know, that can't be very helpful. You know, if you have a tremendous storm, you mentioned the tropical storms that came through, and the weather, amount of grasses, silt, all that.
Yeah, and I tell you, you know, the anglers, you know, they've got folks who go out there and pre-fish or just go fishing or just guide. Fish tournaments, and then, you know, they're dealing with a, you know, changing environment that affects the population too. So it's a pretty complicated system. I think you're probably right that the fishery in the Upper Bay, may start to show signs of stress. But these, you know, catch and release anglers, they certainly, without a doubt, have improved the survivorship of bass by releasing them. Back in the day, the bass tournaments would bring in the fish and they'd all be dead. They'd kill them, and mortality rates are pretty high for that.
Right.
Then when Ray Scott and others came out and said, we're going to do catch and release for our tournament.
Right.
BASF, led that charge, and then others followed that, and then anglers who weren't fishing tournaments began to adopt that. There's still some who eat bass. I think that's
great. Sure.
I eat bass, but most people don't. And that has really improved survival of the fish.
Right.
That said, these fish, they are as tough as they are, they can show signs or do show signs of stress when you're repeatedly handling them or when
sure.
you're moving them around in a live well. So there are some consequences. And I think, this year, I'll be talking with other scientists up at our American Fisheries Society meeting. And we've got a symposium dedicated to how to adopt or what best management practices we can adopt that improve the survival of fish in a catch and release fishery. So
now,
I think there's greater acknowledgement of that problem.
Have you watched this? What's it called? World Championship Fishing, I believe. These tournaments where the fish is caught, weighed, and immediately released. It's not brought back to a big weigh-in spot. It's not a public spectacle. It's all done. It's all done. The judge in the boat has a tablet or a laptop or something there in the boat, and they keep track of all the anglers, and they're able to compare instantly, you know, who caught a fish. Hey, you know, Kevin Van Dam caught a 4-pound, 3-ounce fish, and he's now taken fifth place. You know, that type of, have you watched that show at all?
I've seen one episode, but I tell you, I've seen a little bit of it, but I tell you, we have that going on too in the bay. They're smaller clubs. We're not talking about
Kevin
Van Dam doing it.
Right, no, of course, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. The I think it's a great idea. Honestly,
because you're not putting a fish in a live well, sloshing around with a bunch of other fish, and God knows how fresh the water is and how oxygenated it is. I mean, you got and you know they're not enduring a 20-mile boat ride, bouncing across the tops of the waves in the bay, trying to get to a weigh-in area. It's an immediate, instant gratification. This fish weighs 2 pounds, 3 ounces, and, you know, everybody in the tournament is kind of keeping track of everybody else. And I kind of like the concept if you're going to do competitive fishing because the fish doesn't get handled nearly as much as it would in a standard bass tournament.
Absolutely. And the other great thing about something like that is that it's able to include anglers who may have kayaks without live wells or boats without live wells, so that, you know, they can participate in the fishery as well or in the tournament. They
sure.
can catch the fish, take the picture, you know, send it up through social media. And we have a couple of those, as I mentioned, in the Upper Bay. Don Goff put it with the Susquehanna River Club. They they put one together. And, you know, after speaking with him, you know, it sounds like it was pretty successful. They only had one individual who may have been somewhat unscrupulous, but they were able to you know, work that situation out.
There always is.
So, yeah, there always is. But they were able to get it together, and it sounds great. You know, we honestly haven't gotten into the business of, you know, putting too much regulation and oversight in, you know, how these directors want to conduct their tournaments.
Right.
And so if folks still want to have the staged weigh-in area, you know, obviously that's their right to do so. They've been doing it for years.
Right.
And, you know, part of the problem, at least in the Upper Bay, is that a lot of the tournaments are focused in one particular area, especially the bigger ones, right?
I know. I know exactly where it is. Yep.
Yeah, so we've been mounting a couple of charges on that, but I think more importantly, what we're trying to do, you know, we're funding some work down at Mississippi State University, and we're working with BASF to adopt some better conservation strategies for largemouth and figure out a way to treat that live well like a hospital.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought right there. Hold that thought.
All right.
All right. We got to take
a break,
and I want to hear more about this. This sounds very intriguing to me. But I've got to tell the folks about some stuff that's going on, and particularly the Maryland Fishing Challenge. You know, I talked about it earlier, some of the folks that were participating, and Robert Perkey caught a 41-inch striped bass from Point Lookout, and Tom Musser caught one 42 inches. And Waddell Buzzard caught a 36 1/4-inch rainbow trout in Thermont. And Bob Ports caught a carp, 31 1/2-inch carp in Elkton. And Ryan Bone caught a 23 1/2-inch largemouth up in Frostburg or Finsel. And all these folks are entered now in the Maryland Fishing Challenge, and you can be too. That's right. There are 67 species across Maryland from Garrett County to Ocean City. You can win cash and prizes for fishing in your favorite Maryland spot. $25,000 is being given away in guaranteed cash prizes, including $6,000 in each of the three regions, in the non-title, the Chesapeake Bay and the Atlantic. And then there's a Master Anglers class. If you catch an award-sized fish in each region, you're automatically entered to win $2,000 in cash. And
you're listening to the five.
What was that? It was Fox. Did you press a button that you weren't supposed to press? They just interrupted my show just like that. Oh, blame it on the last guy. Okay. See, I was just getting into this. $5,000 in random cash drawings at the Maryland Fishing Challenge finale event. All this can be found out about online with the Maryland Fishing Challenge. Go to www.dnr.maryland.gov/fisheries. And go fishing.
This is Alan Ellis for Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, spray-on bedliners.
Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie are proud to provide outstanding customer service, just like their number one rated Linex spray-on bed liners, with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex spray-on bed liner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface, is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bed liner from Catonsville Linex or Bay Linex of Glen Burnie. Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie's new location is 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and at a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Hey, Clyde Sports Shop not only is your fishing headquarters, but your hunting headquarters as well. And they are the probably the largest Browning firearms dealer in Maryland, that's for sure. Now, look, if you're into shooting sports, Clyde's has everything you need for the shooting sports. Let me start with a 725 Satori over and under. Perfect blend of beauty and performance. Five injector DS choke tubes, a ported barrel, triple trigger system, Vector Pro, lengthened forcing cones, and tell you what, you will like that if you are into the shotgun sports, whether it's trap or skeet or sporting clays. Now, if you just like trap and skeet, take a look at the BT-99, single shot. You will like this gun as well, and Clyde's has those in stock. Now, if you're into the hunting, you want a pump shotgun, a BPS, that's a standard 12 and 10-gauge models available, bottom ejection, DuraTouch armor coating, Mossy Oak breakup, and Xfinity or Infinity finish. If you want Xfinity, yeah, that's cable network. Sorry. And then there's also the A5. The A5, 5-year, 100,000 round, 5-year guarantee. The most reliable, fastest cycling, best performing, softest shooting recoil operated autoloader on the planet. All this at Clyde Sports Shop. Firearms for home protection, self protection, and hunting and sport and shooting sports. Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just up Beltway Exit 9, 410-242-6108, 242-6108.
This week on Fox News Sunday, you'll hear interviews with the top newsmakers of the week and analysis of the top news stories by our distinguished panel of political experts. This is Chris Wallace. Join me this Sunday at 5 p.m. on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Basis at the tackle shop. I got a chart account running up nonstop. They ought to give me my own parking spot. I can't fit another plug in my tackle box. It's always under construction for all my weapons of mass destruction.
There we go. All right, back with Dr. Joseph Love, the tidal bass manager for Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fishery Service, and tell me about this, taking a look at the live well.
Yes, sir. You know, one of the great things, interesting things about this fishery is that all of the anglers, or most of the anglers, want to keep their bass alive. And a lot of the work that's been done has been aimed at trying to improve the survival of the fish. So whether you're out fishing just a Sunday or out fishing a tournament or whatever, the idea is that they want to keep, make sure their fish is alive when they release it. Well, as we mentioned earlier, you know, as we talked about earlier, you know, handling stress, exercise of the fish on the line, you know, maybe that fish has got some diseases, some lesions on its body. So all of those things can kind of compromise the health of the fish. Sometimes the fish is gut hooked, so it makes it really tough to expect it to live after you release it, but sometimes they do. And, in order to improve chances that the fish lives. Some folks down at Mississippi State, Hal Schramm, who also works with Gene Gilliland, the new conservation director for BASS, they're working on this project to determine if live wells can be used as essentially as hospitals for bass. So whether you're fishing a tournament or you're just out fishing, the idea is that once you catch your fish, before just taking it off the hook and releasing it, maybe put it into the live well and let it recover a little bit before you toss it back. And one of the reasons why they're thinking that it potentially could be a good hospital is because they believe that lower water temperatures and higher oxygen helps resuscitate the fish, gives more oxygen to the tissues of the fish, and it also helps the mucus coat of the fish. So those types of things will help improve its chances of survivorship. So we decided to work with about, I think, 7 or 8 other state agencies, give some money to Mississippi State. It's really not much money. And if this works out well over the next 2 or 3 years, then we will have information that BASS can hand out to their anglers and information that we can hand out to our anglers, all of our anglers. And that information will hopefully lead folks to start using the live wells, at least, maybe in a different way, maybe a little bit more effectively, and lead to, better survival of bass. And that's kind of where I'm hoping we'll go. I mean, I understand we've got a lot of tournament pressure and such in some areas, but, we want to work with everyone to make sure that they can, essentially fish for bass the way they want to fish for bass. They have a right to fish for them, and
right.
Our job, in part, is to support that activity, either it's through stocking or new regulations. But in this case, it's through science, and hopefully, hopefully we'll have some good information for everyone in a couple of years.
I just want to say that I have never been more impressed with biologists than I have been in Maryland. The boots on the ground folks, led by, effective managers like yourself, these are the folks that, they're out there every day trying to provide for the sustainability of every species that we have here in Maryland. Maryland has probably the most science-based fish and wildlife management I've ever seen anywhere, ever heard about. And you guys are to be highly complimented on basing every decision pretty much on science. And then, not only that, but taking into consideration the recreational angler in every decision that's made. So that my compliments and from here anyway, that you guys are doing just a stupendous job with that.
Well, thanks, Alan. And, that means a lot coming from you. It really does. We sometimes can become a little insular, a little isolated.
Well, it's easy to point the finger. Something goes wrong and guy has a bad day, all of a sudden it's DNR's fault.
Right.
I know.
And I think, one of the things we've been trying maybe to do a better job of is, fielding more grievances from the anglers. And there are some things that we can do things about and some things we struggle with because it's a very complicated problem and we can't, effectively solve it. And Steve Chaconis, Captain
Steve. I know Steve. Chaconis, sure.
Yep. He actually told me to tell you hi.
Did he really? Tell him I said hello to him. He's a good guy. Yeah, I haven't seen him in a while. Good guy.
Yeah, he's been busy. He's been developing his bass guide, and he's working snakeheads now, too.
That's cool. Tell Steve I want to call. We got to get together for a snakehead trip. Never done snakeheads, and I want to do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's the man.
Oh, really? He's the guy, huh?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I'll let him know.
Steve know I want to do. I want to do a fish. I want to do a snakehead trip with him. That would be great.
So, okay. All right, I'll do that.
All right. Since you circle back to the Potomac and Steve Chaconis.
Yep.
We talked about potential for problems in the Upper Bay. But tell me about this catch and return areas on the tidal Potomac and catch and return areas on the Upper Bay. Tell me about that.
Right. So, in we talked a little bit about the problems on the Potomac River and what the other agencies were learning and what we learned, and I'm trying to mesh all that together. And as part of that, you know, we listened to Captain Penrod and a few others who were hoping to see some regulation changes. So we sent out a survey and asked people essentially what they thought about changing creel limits and size limits, and told them what the ramifications of that might be and what the most cost-effective solutions might be. And they, they weighed in. And we had maybe about, it was a 50-50 split roughly on whether we should change regulations or not. And what was surprising is a lot of the tournament anglers, maybe about 40% of them, wanted to see a regulation change. And that really just demonstrates that people generally want to protect their fish, regardless of whether they're fishing a tournament or not. And that was heartening. And we had conversations with, the other agencies, but because their survey showed something, different than what our survey showed, they were more reluctant to, change regulations. And I was reluctant to argue to change a creel limit or size limit on the Potomac River when it would have led to a more confusing situation, because it would be perhaps more confusing to have regulations different in Virginia, Virginia side of the river.
Well, you have three agencies there. You have Virginia, you have the Potomac River Fisheries Commission, and you have Maryland.
Right. And then, some of our anglers also fish D.C.
Which is number four, yeah.
Which is number four, right. So that would have made it tough. So our, the solution that maybe we're gravitating to, and we need to get a lot of public information on this one, are catch and return areas. Now, there's a catch and return area in the non-tidal Potomac, there aren't any in the Potomac River for bass. We thought about instituting them because we think that they may keep the spawning stock in those areas, keep fish in the beds,
right,
when during the spawning season. But even outside of the spawning season, if we went with a year-round catch and return area, it keeps those fish within that area. So it provides, a recreational fishery that doesn't have to deal with, tournament anglers going in there and taking fish and pulling them out of the river, which has been a complaint from a number of anglers.
Which means if these guys, let's say they go to small water somewhere down there, they run the whole river, they bring all the fish back to Smallwood, and then they release them right there, that takes those fish out of those other areas where they've been fishing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that can really be a problem in some areas that are, more isolated or smaller or don't have as great habitat.
Right.
But, locals use them to fish. So, we talked about developing these catch and return areas, and I'm thinking that in July, during our Sport Fish Commission meeting, I'll present this as an idea. I understand that a lot of people are going to be maybe polarized on their viewpoints of this, and perhaps, have different opinions on where the catch and return area should be. So after July, we're going to likely launch a pretty big, public information session.
Good.
And
keep us in the loop on that.
Yeah, okay. I will.
Yeah, absolutely.
This year, we started asking during the licensing operation, when people, go in and get their sportfish
right.
license, we began asking people if they fish for largemouth bass or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do, if they said, yes, we fish for largemouth bass, and they provided their email address because they wanted to receive information from DNR, my goal is going to be to get those email addresses and send people a link to that survey, because those people who are targeting largemouth bass likely have most to say about
sure.
catch and return areas for largemouth bass.
Got it.
So that's going to be one way we get it, get some information. If we can, work through outlets like yours, that would also help. We got to spread the message, because, as I said, we haven't we haven't had a regulation change really with the bass fishery since the late 80s, and catch and return areas can be a big deal, but for particularly for some people, because it's essentially taking some areas off the map for tournament anglers. And I'm very sensitive to, you know, fishing rights and making sure that people still have the opportunity to go fishing where they like to. So,
well, look what happened! Look what happened to Biscayne Bay.
Right.
I don't know if people are aware of that, but the public has basically been locked out of Biscayne Bay. It's, what is that, 10,000 acres of now it's a marine protected area and no recreational fishing at all.
Yeah, and you know, we, I guess a couple of years, maybe it was about 4 years ago, we had an area on the Potomac that the DOD was near Quantico Base, and they said, yeah, we're just going to shut it off altogether, so there's no one in there.
Yep.
I can understand those choices, I think the more and more it happens, though, the more and more people are going to get pissed off about it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Yeah, sure. So, all right, hang on there. We're going to take another break, and this is the second one. We have another one coming up a little later in the hour, so hang in there. We want to talk a little bit more about not only that survey, but some other important topics as well. I mean, this is a huge part of fishing in Maryland, all the tidal bass fishing and that type of thing, but I've got to tell the folks about our buddies at NBS Seafood, that's for sure. You know, if you want to have something to do this weekend, consider adding a little Cajun to your seafood menu. You know, you can do some steaks on the grill, and NBS Seafood has the Black Angus New York strips, perfect for the grill. Marinate them a little bit, and then get them out there on the grill. And while you're doing that, boil up some Louisiana crawfish with some andouille sausage and some corn on the cob and some red skin potatoes. Throw a little gator sausage in there and some gator tail meat. Have yourself some onions and some good seafood seasoning. Oh, man. Have yourself a good old seafood feast. NBS Seafood, 1223 Dorsey Road in Glen Burnie, has all that stuff. And not only that, Louisiana crabs and Maryland crabs are starting to come on. NBS also carries fresh wild-caught white perch. They have jumbo shrimp and scallops and fresh crab meat and a variety of other seafood items. And they have that spice to make that Cajun dream come true, or your standard crab spice as well. You know, NBS, they're open Thursday, Friday, and Mondays from 2 to 7, Saturday, 10 to 7, that's today, and then Sunday, noon to 5 p.m. The phone number there is 410-271-3202. They're located right next to Jim Donny RV. They're on Dorsey Road, 1223. The phone number again, 410-271-3202. NBS, which stands for No BS or No Bull Stuff, will accept Visa, MasterCard, EBT, and cash. Any questions? 410-271-3202 for NBS Seafood.
After a partly cloudy start to this Saturday, scattered showers and a few thunderstorms will be possible during the afternoon with a high climbing up to 87 degrees. The rain that does move in during the day will tape off into the evening hours. The overnight low will eventually drop down to 70. More the same Sunday, partly cloudy initially, then some scattered afternoon showers and thunderstorms with a high near 86 degrees. And as we make our way to Monday, there will be some showers, possibly some strong thunderstorms. It will be a little bit hotter as well with a high in the low 90s. I'm Jeff Maher from the Weather Channel for Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Hey, Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit number 9. I talked about all the fishing stuff they do. I talked about all the firearms. If you need anything for the great outdoors, fishing, hunting, crabbing, archery, Clyde Sports Shop is your place to go. They've been around since 1957. They pretty much got it down by now. They can help you out with advice for fishing. They can help you out with live bait. They can help you out with firearms and ammunition. They can show you anything and everything that you need for any outdoor activity in those realms, fishing, hunting, crabbing, shooting sports. They've got it all at Clyde Sports Shop. Again, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, Beltway Exit 9. Why not stop by? Give them a call, 410-242-6108. That's 410-242-6108. Clyde's Sports is the website. And don't forget that 24-hour fishing hotline, 247-3474. 247-FISH is the fishing hotline for Clyde Sports Shop.
Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good.
The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you. Hey, don't forget, today's a free fishing day. That means you can go fishing without a license anywhere in Maryland and don't have to be concerned about getting checked for having a license. Today only, and then again on July 4th. That's right, it's a free fishing day in Maryland. And don't forget, the Maryland Fishing Challenge is out there, too. You know, if you like to win prizes like a new boat or cash or a fishing trip or equipment, no strings attached, just fish to win. 67 species across Maryland. Cash and prizes for fishing in your favorite Maryland fishing hole. $25,000 in guaranteed cash prizes, including $6,000 in each of the three regions. That's $18,000 in altogether in the non-tidal, the Chesapeake Bay, and the Atlantic. And then if you're a master angler, you catch an award-sized fish in each of those regions, you're automatically entered to win $2,000 in cash. And then $5,000 in random cash drawings at the Maryland Fishing Challenge finale event. But you can't get to that unless you get a winning entry in the Maryland Fishing Challenge. So you just catch a fish of a notable size, get your angler award, and you're in. That's all there is to it. Get all the details at dnr.maryland.gov/fisheries, the Maryland Fishing Challenge. Hey, for great fishing tackle, crabbing supplies, and up-to-date fishing and crabbing information, head to Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. To get there, take Route 100 to the end. Hop on Mountain Road towards Gibson Island. Go 2.5 miles to 4729 Mountain Road. All you need for any type of fishing, crabbing, and the best fishing report on the Mid-Bay. Fishbones also carries the best stainless steel crab steamers you'll ever find. Call 410-360-0573, 410-360-0573 for Fishbones Bait and Tackle, Pasadena.
Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
Hey, we're back. Dr. Joe Love, good morning again. You with me?
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Yes, sir.
Cool. We're rolling here. Where were we? We were talking about the angler survey and wanting to know what the recreational fishermen are up to and that type of thing. Let's flip over to the Eastern Shore. We've got a lot of listeners on the Eastern Shore.
Yes, sir. We've got a lot of fun stuff, happening on the Eastern Shore. A lot of interesting stuff going on.
Go ahead.
This year we'll be stocking some fish into the Choptank River. Scott Sewell is a guide in the Upper Bay. He also suggested Fairley Creek and Wharton Creek.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to put some fish into those systems as well. The Choptank is one of our long-term stocking projects. We've crunched a lot of numbers because we've marked a lot of hatchery fish, and we've learned that probably the best way to build a fishery like on the Choptank River is to have consistent stocking of larger fish. And that seems to be a pattern that other state agencies are moving toward, probably for the same reason that we are. So
the fry and the fingerlings don't necessarily have that survivability that a little larger fish might have.
Yeah, absolutely right. Those young fish, they get picked off real quick by other predators like white perch or yellow perch in the area. And Choptank's got a lot of wonderful yellow perch and white perch
that I've seen,
and it makes for a little bit more difficult situation when you're stocking really small fish. So
sure,
we the problem with stocking big fish is that the bigger they are, the more they eat other fish, so there tends to be a little bit more cannibalism. So we wanted to work out a situation where we can raise the fish as big as we possibly can without having cannibalism affect the number of fish we put in the water.
Right.
So, you know, we're going to be doing that. We're going to be stocking in the fall, September, October. We're going to be putting the fish out there. And I think, we're going to consistently do that every other year, particularly on the Choptank River, in an effort to try and build that fishery. And, in order to figure out, honestly, if we're making an impact.
Sure.
We're going to start, we just started actually just a couple weeks ago. Start surveying anglers. We've got an online survey. It's a volunteer angler survey, but
right.
this past year I've revamped it for our inland systems, and we're going to be collecting more quantitative and informative information from our anglers
mm-hmm.
to get a better idea of their satisfaction with the fishery and what they're catching so that we know if what we're doing is improving the fishery or not. So that... that survey was recently emailed out to a random group of license holders, and I'm planning on continuing that survey every year, twice a year.
All right.
So we'll hopefully get some information on that. And then the Wicomico River's had, you know, some issues there. Captain Bruce Wooten's expressed a lot of concern regarding pollution in that upper end near Salisbury.
Right.
And there have been some improvements. I spoke with the coordinator for the Wicomico Creek Watchers there,
right.
And a report is going to be presented on Monday. I plan on going to listen to that. And that system should be improving. They've gotten a lot of money to improve their wastewater
right.
facility to reduce nitrogen. They're also starting essentially a stormwater fee, a utilities fee that will help perhaps, hopefully, reduce the amount of nutrients that come into the Wicomico from stormwater. So
okay.
that'll be great.
Good.
And the one thing that I'd like to hear more about is if there are any projects designed to remove trash from the upper river, because, you know, Salisbury is a huge thing.
Well, that would be your river keepers down there. That would be, you know, their deal. So, hey, listen.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. We got to take a little break, but I have a comment here from Tackle Box Tim. I know you know Tim Sherman, right?
Yeah.
We got a comment here on email. And by the way, happy birthday there, Tim. He turns 50. How about that?
Hey, happy birthday.
Yeah, no kidding.
Great.
This August, the Bass Elite Series will be visiting the Upper Bay. They do... recuperate the bass in a release boat. However, during the last two bass opens, they merely ran around the corner from the weigh-in and hit the release button. Thus, there was a concentration of bass right there in the Northeast River. Can DNR strongly suggest that a bass organization using a release boat make a longer run to where the bass can disperse through the broader area? For instance, during the Elite Tournament at the mouth of the Northeast where they can spread throughout the river and the flats.
We could. We've had that conversation a lot, to be honest.
Okay.
But the problem is that if it's a windy day,
they're not going anywhere.
Those heavy release boats, the captain won't take them down to the mouth because it's a safety issue, or
right.
you know, further down. But I'll tell you what we can do this year, because you know we go to the tournaments with release boats.
Sure.
We can push that release boat as far down Northeast River as we can. You know, we can tell
right.
the captain. Usually they're very accommodating.
Yep.
But when there's a safety issue, like if there's too much wind or they just don't feel comfortable taking it down because they're worried about capsizing the boat or whatever,
right.
they're not going to do it. We can't force them to do it.
All right.
We don't have the authority to force them to do it. But
okay.
They do listen to us. So we'll do that, Tim.
Sure, there you go, Tim.
Try and push them as far down.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll come back with a closing comment about the Bassmaster Elite.
This is Alan Ellis for Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service, just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface, is impervious to fuels and
and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands and tools and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex spray-on bed liner from Bay Linex of Glen Burnie or Catonsville Linex. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, new location, 201 Wholesome Way in Glen Burnie. 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800.
W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything. Their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto.
Talk Radio 680 WCBN.
Hey, we're back with Dr. Joe Love, and we just want to wind up by talking about the Cecil County Bassmaster Elite coming up August 13th through the 16th.
Yeah, it's going to be a great event, I think. Maryland DNR is going to be a little involved in that. There's going to be a youth fishing component to it. Cecil County tourism is
Sandy Turner, great
show.
Great lady Sandy Turner, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I tell you, it's going to be a pretty big event. They've got over 100 anglers, I think, registered for the tournament, and they're going to be pros, so you're going to get a chance, if you go out to see them, you're going to get a chance to see the pros in action, maybe get some autographs, which is always fun.
Yep.
Get to see the bass coming in.
Yep.
There's going to be a reduced creel limit on these guys, so it's not, you're not going to see, you know, huge 10 bass brought in, or
right.
You're not going to see big bags like that per boat, but you'll get to see the big fish coming in, hopefully.
Cool.
And see how great the fishery is in the Upper Bay. And Anchor Marine's a really great spot for a tournament because of the infrastructure there. So
right.
That's pretty accommodating, and it's got good parking. So
oh, yeah, no question about that. I know those guys. And Sandy Turner with Cecil County Tourism is great. I know she does a great job up there. I can't mention all the sponsors, but I do know that a new company called Marilina Outdoors. I don't know if you know those guys, Joe.
No, I don't
yeah,
know them
news,
at all.
They've signed on. They are, I want you to Google Marilina, M-A-R-O-L-I-N-A, outdoor, no S on the end, a new apparel company that is focused on this new line of apparel for fishermen. And they're coming out 2016 with their hunting line. We just had a three-piece outfit donated to them, and beautiful stuff. I mean, beautiful hunting gear, and fishing gear as well that came out from this company. They were helpful with helping our fundraiser on May 30th for the Maryland Hunting Coalition. So we want to give a little shout out to Marilina Outdoors. I understand they've signed on as a one of the sponsors of this Cecil County Bassmaster Elite Tournament, August 13th through the 16th.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, Old Dominion Electric.
I hope to see him out there.
Yeah, Old Dominion Electric Cooperative, Town of Northeast, and Maryland Lottery are the platinum sponsors. Integrity Real Estate is a diamond sponsor. Gold is Exelon. Silver is Remax. Bronze is the Naughty Goose. And Friends are Howard Bank and Chesapeake Utilities. See, there I got them all in. So, anyway, listen, Joe, wonderful
yep.
as always. You got to come back because you're just so full of information. We got more information today than... Well, then we could fit into an hour because I know there's lots more to go. So,
anytime.
All right, buddy. Thanks. Thank you, Doctor.